Hey, this is John Fred Young from the band Blackstone Cherry, and you are listening to the Blog of Rock.
Hallo Leute, ich begrüße euch heute wieder als Anhalter auf meinem American Roadtrip. Stammgäste meines Podcasts kennen ja bereits die Geschichte. Animiert von einem Gläschen meines Lieblings-Bourbon Maker's Mark kam ich auf die verrückte Idee, mit euch gemeinsam einen virtuellen Trip quer durch die USA zu machen, um nach den Wurzeln meiner musikalischen Helden zu buddeln. Wer diesen Einstieg verpasst hat, der sollte sich noch einmal schnell diese Trailer-Episode etwas weiter unten anhören, wie genau ich auf diesen Geschmack gekommen bin. Und welche Rolle hier eine Flasche mit roter Wachsversiegelung aus Kentucky, USA spielt, die mich mit einem bernsteinfarbenen, milden, süßlichen Inhalt bei 45 Umdrehungen zu diesen handgemachten Geschichten inspiriert hat. Wir sind vor 3 Episoden in Chicago gestartet und waren zunächst bei Cheap Trick in Rockford, Illinois. Danach ging es über weite Teile der alten Route 66 nach St. Louis, Missouri, wo wir Devin Allman von der Allman Bats Band getroffen haben, der uns eine Menge Südstaaten-Feeling mitgegeben hat. Und von dort aus ging es weiter nach Loretto, Kentucky zur Destillerie von Maker's Mark, um mehr über die Geschichte dieses Handmade Bourbon zu erfahren. Heute geht's wie angekündigt weiter in Kentucky nach Edmonton, wo wir einen der lustigsten Musiker treffen, den ich je interviewen durfte. John Fred Young, den Drummer von Blackstone Cherry. Und der hat eine ganze Menge zu erzählen. Also verlieren wir mal besser keine Zeit und düsen los. Schnallt euch an und genießt den Fahrtwind. Auf Wikipedia findet man über diese US-Kleinstadt nur sehr wenig, außer, dass sie die Heimat der Grammy-Gewinner The Kentucky Headhunters ist, einer Band, in der der Vater unseres heutigen Gastes spielt, und es ist eben die Heimat von Blackstone Cherry. Diese Hardrock-Band hat eine Menge Südstaatenblut in den Adern und mit The Human Condition eines meiner persönlichen Lieblingsalben des Jahres 2020 rausgehauen. Nachdem ihre letzten Lebenszeichen doch sehr bluesig waren, holen sie auf diesem, wieder einmal selbstproduzierten Album, die schweren Gitarrenriffs aus dem Waffenschrank. Das Ganze ist zudem gespickt mit jeder Menge potenzieller Stadionhymnen. Unser digitaler Talk musste 3-mal angesetzt werden, bevor es endlich klappte. 2-mal hatte sich der Schlagzeuger jeweils mit anderen Journalisten verquatscht. Ihr werdet es gleich besser verstehen, was ich meine. Doch diesmal erwischte ich John Fred im Auto, als er gerade unterwegs beim Einkaufen war, weil ihm die Milch ausgegangen ist. Es lag Schnee dort, aber mein Gast hatte einen Winteranorak an und war trotz der eisigen Temperaturen bestens gelaunt. In fast 40 Jahren, die ich jetzt schon Interviews mit Musikern mache, habe ich selten jemanden erlebt, der so redselig und lustig war wie dieser Kollege hier. Wenn ihr mehr Bock darauf habt, viel weiter unten findet ihr eine XXL-Version dieses Talks in einer ungeschnittenen Version. Im folgenden Talk geht es natürlich um das letzte Album The Human Condition, aber auch um seine neuen Programmierkünste während der Produktion, um American Football und seinen großen Wunsch, einmal Fußball-Bundesliga live in einem deutschen Stadion. Aber fangen wir erstmal mit dem Wetter an. John Fred sitzt in seinem Auto mit einer Wintermütze. Wie ist die Lage bei dir?
I am. I'm actually in my snow suit here because in Kentucky it is, well, it's not snowing compared to, you know, a lot of other places in the world that gets, you know, real snow. But we really, like, you know, for us, we don't really get a lot of snow, but, you know, 2 to 3 inches is a massive snow. But, you know, I'll tell you, 2014, we had never really had a huge snow in Kentucky since maybe the mid-90s. And I was probably a small kid. And I think that maybe came 12 or 13 inches. But in 2014, I was actually home. We weren't touring, and it came this massive blizzard. So we had almost 30 inches of snow, and I did not have a vehicle that could really get out in the snow. I didn't have a four-wheel drive, and so I was stuck. So I told myself, my wife and I just had our first child, our little girl. She was a baby, and I said, I'm never getting stuck, you know, in a situation where I don't have a big four-wheel drive truck, you know. So the next year, I went out and got one of these Toyota FJ Cruisers, and it looks like a turtle, and it can go anywhere. I mean, it's just an odd SUV. But the next year, I was out on the road, and it came this massive snow in Kentucky again, and I didn't get to get out and play in the snow. So now it's just like back to this like little dust stuff, you know. So.
Na, dann würde ich ja gerne mal so sehen, wie du so lebst. Nimmst du mich auf eine Runde mit?
Well, I'm actually not on our farm right now. I'm in town, so I had to come to the big city to get some supplies. You know, the milk, the bread, the toilet paper, you know, all that.
Ich selbst bin ja gut versorgt und poste ihm mit einer Flasche Maker's Mark entgegen, die ich mir in die Kamera halte.
That's right. I'll tell you, it's about 50 minutes to an hour from us. So we're in South Central Kentucky. Of course, we live in a town called Edmonton, very small town. And then the biggest town next to us is a place about 50 miles west called Bowling Green, Kentucky.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, Kentucky's known for, you know, it's bourbon, it's horse racing. And hopefully, you know, it's rock and roll, because there's been some cool, you know, bands. I mean, we do have a really cool music scene in this state, and you know, it's very vast across the genres. You know, you've had, you know, bluegrass to rap to rock to country. I mean, we've had a lot of artists come out of the state over decades, you know, and I don't know what it is. Maybe something's in the water, maybe something's in the bourbon, or the water that makes the bourbon over the limestone. I don't know.
Zunächst will ich mit ihm über das letzte BSC-Album sprechen, welches die Band abgeschieden in ihrem Studio mitten in den Wäldern aufgenommen hat. Es folgt nun eine epische Geschichte.
We really worked hard on this record, and I'll tell you, man, of all the albums we've made, I feel, and I think the other band guys would say this too, we really had no idea what we were doing when we went into the studio. Because I think, you know, on Family Tree, which was such a fun album to make, it was, yeah, you know, for to kind of sum that up in my own opinion, that was our, like, just tribute to all the great 70s classic rock bands that we grew up on, fortunately enough, and from listening to our parents' stuff, you know, because we're all 80s babies. We were born in the 80s, but you know, that record was just like, I think we were in the mindset of like Tres Hombres, you know, like Toys in the Attic. Like, I don't know, man. We were just in this like ZZ Top, Skinner, Aerosmith,
Almonds.
Like Almonds and 38 Special and Skinner, all this stuff that just like the 70s, Thin Lizzy. And I think we went into that record just making that mindset of like, let's just go in and make a killer, badass Blackstone Cherry record, but let's just have it sound and feel like it came out of like 1974, you know, or six or something. So, and you know, we toured, that record did really great for us. We toured, I think it was like 300 and some shows off of that record from April 2018 until, November, about the middle of November of 2019. So first time in the band's career in a long time, I think we were just burnt. I mean, we were not of like each other, but just because, you know, we're a live touring band. I mean, we tour and tour. So I think we had toured so much. And honestly, at the end of last year, we were starting to actually get like really sick and from like head colds and just, you know, I don't know if we might have even had like the virus before everybody even knew it was here, you know. I mean, like, because I mean, a lot of us got this upper respiratory thing, and
don't tell me, like, the virus was originally from Kentucky.
No, I hope not. I don't think so. During that month, we were just so beat down. Chris was having some troubles with his voice, and we wrote 4 songs on the back of the bus, and we were just like, you know, instead of us trying to like just kill ourselves to try to write and write and write, let's take those 4 songs and let's after the last show of 2019, let's just rest. Let's go home, you know, have Christmas with the family, so Thanksgiving, Christmas. And we knew we were going to get in the studio by February, you know, middle of February. So we were like, let's just take a break, you know? So when we went down to John's studio, we really had those 4. And then, so we took about, like, I think 11 days to go through, like, what drum kit I was going to use, like, what heads on the drum kit, cymbals, like, mics. I'll be honest with you. I had a great team working together on the drums on this record. And I've done records in the past, you know, that, man, we've got killer drum sounds, but on this one, it was just really special. I had, there was a great, our on the road, drum tech and percussionist, Jeff, he was there helping a great buddy of ours, Mark, was helping on the drums. Great. Like old school analog guy, tunes by feel, you know, instead of just listening. And, a lot of knowledge there, a lot of knowledge. And then I got to give it up to our buddy Jordan, who mixed the record, and he just, man, he's a engineer wizard. And I think for the first time, we spent so much time on like honing in an original, just unique drum sound. And, you know, on the whole record, like every instrument, the bass, the guitars, you know, it was like we spent hours and hours dialing in just awesome tones. And it really, I mean, having a guy too, like Jordan, and Mark and Jeff, like it was great. I mean, this has always been a family thing for us. So like that team, man, was just like, man, they worked so hard, and we had such a great time. And we actually, to be honest, we recorded the record a little different. And it was kind of inspired. It was inspired by Jordan. He was like, you know, you guys go in and you know, all 4 of you guys go in a room and you cut live. And meaning that, you know, we all 4 play together, and then we keep the best drum track, you know, the performance, you know, so it's like a live drum track. And if there's anything that I mess up, and I mess up, so we can go back and just push in that little, or punch in that little part. But this one we did a little different. We laid down a, like a scratch guitar track. And then once like Chris or Ben laid it down, I would go in by myself and play the drums to that scratch guitar track. And the guys would sit back in the control room. So for me, it was like getting a microscope in all the, you know, places that like maybe I could, you know, get by, you know, kind of like just, you know, oh yeah, it's good enough. This was like, I had a microscope up my rear end, man. And it was like everything I did, but it was really good because the guys got to sit there and like in their head, you know, what guitar parts make sense with what he's playing, and you know, what am I playing that might not make sense with this riff? And I would work harder to find that drum beat or that like hook that made sense. And I think I captured a lot of the ballistics of like my playing, the wild, crazy feels and stuff, but I was really determined to make the drums just like be air drums. I mean, everybody in the world, man, as soon as In the Air Tonight comes on, man, everybody's like, do, 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 bah, bah. You know, and I wanted that, you know, and I know the guys did too on their riffs, you know, and the same for like Chris's singing, you know. We've never been a band that went in the studio and said, you know, man, everything on this record's got to be perfect, and it's got to be, you know, formulated for like radio. But on this one, you know, us producing it, obviously you can't you can't blame the producer that's driving the $300,000 Mercedes. You know, you got to take blame. If it ain't right, it's on your ass. You know what I'm saying? So, I mean, we tried really hard. And I'll tell you, it was really cool. We had this, like, just treasure chest of songs that had not been put on records before. Like, you know, like every record you make, you have some songs that, you know, maybe you wish would have went on that album, but it kind of was in a competition with another song that for some reason beat that song out to make the record. And it didn't mean that these songs we had that didn't make previous albums weren't amazing. It was just like, man, we had another one. And maybe like the previous label we were on, like that song, and thought it might do better for, like, you know, radio. But we kept these songs for years and years. And I'm talking about stuff that went back all the way to when we were, before we ever had a record deal, you know, sitting in the practice house as teenagers. You know, there's a song on the record called Ride, which actually used to be called Wheels of Fire. And it's the really up-tempo one. And we, you know, that was in 2004. So, I mean, we were just kids, you know. And people, I've had people say, man, that song sounds like stuff off of Rock and Roll Tape, the album that you guys released, like, in high school. You know, and I'm like, well, there's a reason for that, you know. They're like, it kind of sounds like something, like, on your first album, but maybe before. So, I'm like, that's cool, you know. And there's songs that, you know, we had written going into Folklore and Superstition. There's stuff that didn't make that record, there's stuff that didn't make Devil, Magic Mountain, so on. And it was just time where, you know, we opened that box, and this is stuff that, like, on days off on the road, like when we're touring, you know, throw up a Bluetooth speaker, like somebody's like, man, let's listen to, like, I don't know, you know, something. And then somebody's like, hey, let's go through the chest, let's listen to some of these older songs. And we always do, and we felt really connected to those songs, and we didn't ever consider them B-sides. You know, they weren't throwaway songs. So, man, we opened it up, got in the studio, started listening to them, and I think we had maybe 12 or 13 songs, and I think eight, maybe, if I'm not wrong, maybe eight or nine of those songs made the actual record. And, you know, you sit back and you go, okay, how do songs from different time periods, you know, as you grow as a human and a musician, how do those songs all fit together? Because they're from so many different time periods of, like, your emotional journey, your playing. Like, you know, I played, like, on the demo in 2005. Like, I played that way different than I would now. So you have to adapt those things, like, when you get in the studio and you keep the stuff that was just, you know, epic, and then you rewrite stuff. And I remember we actually great again was an old song that we basically kept the bridge and I think the verse, and then we rewrote the chorus and I think even the intro and outro lick and stuff in the studio. So we're just a big hodgepodge of stuff, man. And it, you know, and you know what, at the end of the day, like, you listen, when we were done, you know, getting our track listing for the album, you look at these songs and you listen to them, and our fear was like, oh man, I hope they all work together. You know, I hope they all, you know, fit and tell a story as one sonic picture, you know, a landscape of this album. And they did. And that's what's so magical, you know, and you're like, wow, this stuff, it still holds up. In the song, at the core of everything, the song still holds up the meaning and the playing, you know, and being able to, you know, revise those some to make them all work together. We got really lucky, you know, and I'm glad, man.
Dabei hatte das Ganze nicht so gut angefangen, da Frontman Chris Robertson große Probleme mit der Stimme hatte.
I'll tell you one thing on this record that was pretty remarkable for all of us. As I was saying, back in November, you know, Chris started feeling like his throat was going out, and it was, and he was pushing through. He's a monster. You know, he just goes out. It doesn't matter what's going on. He's going to go deliver, you know. And sure enough, he got home. He's like, you know, guys, I'm going to go check my voice out, see what's going on, be proactive about it. And he went in, and the doctor said, you have, you know, a callus on your vocal cord. It's just from overuse, from just being Chris, man, pushing and pushing, you know? So, you know, he said, it's no big deal. This is like a, you know, it's a minor surgery. We can take care of this. He said, I've done it 1,000 times, you know, with singers. So we all were very optimistic. Chris was very positive, you know, but on the other hand, you know, going in to do a record in 3-4 weeks, Chris was, you know, had his date to go have a surgery. So we were, you know, we were a little like, oh gosh, you know, but he had the surgery, and I think he was on vocal rest for maybe 1.5-2 weeks. So we started drums, and Chris is in there. He can't talk, you know, he's like doing the hand signals, you know, and he's like clapping to get our attention. You know? But, the first day Chris stepped up to do a vocal, you know, I mean, I think every one of us were, you know, had this great, like, positive, man, it's going to be great. It's going to be great. But, you know, obviously, like, in all truth, we're sitting there going, ah, you know, and he was too. But we had a positive outlook. And I tell you, he stepped up to the mic, and it was like he was 22 again. His voice was so clear, and he still had that grit, that Chris tone, that character, that soulful blues, just beast Chris voice. But it was like this refreshed clarity in his voice. Like it took 10 years or 12 years off his age, you know. It's like computer reset, man. And I'll tell you, he gained an octave, and he also gained a falsetto, like a head voice that he'd never been able to have. And I think, you know, you don't really think about it, but like vocal cords are so they're mesmerizing. Like the human vocal cord it's extremely delicate, but it's in nature, it's like, you know, when you look at it through like a scope, you know, it's two pieces of skin, you know, and like if one of them gets just a little bit damaged, you know, or worn, you know, it can really change the whole spectrum of your voice, the tonal quality. And Chris was like, I mean, it was, you know, shit, it was kind of like an emotional moment almost, you know, for everybody, because man, he walked up there and just, it was like, whoa, you know, dude. So I'm totally just, you know, everybody is, but we were beyond thrilled, and he sang his face off on this record. I mean, really did. And you know, Chris and I have been friends since kindergarten. So like 5 years old, man, when we met each other, and we've been friends ever since. And you know, in school, we played football together, and like, so, and you know, all four of us, we're brothers, and we've been, golly, we've been through challenges, we've been through hurdles, and on this big journey, but it's always been the four of us, man. And for going on like next year as a band, it'll be 20 years.
Wie hast du denn die Zeit der Pandemie bisher verbracht? Hast du neue Hobbys oder neue Seiten an dir entdeckt?
Yes, actually, I'll tell you. So when we were making the record, we got to a point where we had about, I would think, maybe 4 to 5 days left on kind of our, you know, projected studio time. And, you know, John built a killer studio in the woods, and man, it you know, we didn't like have to be out of there at a certain time, because, you know, it's John's place, and, you know, it's very, you know, relaxed. But I think that because the nature of the with the virus, Kentucky took some measures to shut everything down, you know, businesses, and obviously with you guys too over there, everybody, you know, was shutting down, trying to control this thing. But for us, we had about 4 or 5 days left, and we were like, you know, yeah, we're going to have to shut down. So we got everything done. Luckily, we got all our tracking done, all the vocals. But, you know, when we got home, you know, Jordan started, you know, mixing this stuff, and just rough mixing. And we were listening to tracks back, and there was a lot of stuff where, you know, we were just like, man, there's something that needed to be here. Like we have buddies of ours who are incredible violin, cello players. You know, like there's a guy in Bowling Green incredible. Chris Carmichael, who's, you know, he's got a Grammy, you know. So, I mean, like, we wanted to have guys like that come in and play. Buddies of ours who are amazing, you know, organ players, you know, like B3 and Whirly guys. You know, we've got great friends who are you know, amazing female backup singers, you know, here locally, church singers, the girls that sang on Kentucky. And we just couldn't do it, you know, because it was scary. I mean, you know, obviously, I mean, we're all sitting here going, wow, man, we can't, like, you know, we can't invite people down and you know, what if they got it? What if we, you know, spread some? So with that said, listening back, I was like, guys, listen, I was like, I hear string parts on a couple songs and I hear piano parts, and everybody else was like, yeah, we do too, you know? So I was like, look, I've got, in my spare time when I was home, like, I started working with a lot of virtual instruments. And for me, I've been a huge electronic music fan for years. And I think that that was probably just kind of, you contribute that to the fact that I think in the early days when we would play in Germany and England and Scandinavia, we would like hit our last note and, you know, it was like, okay, we're trying to pull our gear off stage. And then, dude, there's a DJ coming up right behind. Like, you couldn't get your gear off stage fast enough until the DJ was up there with the turntables and, like, you know, the laptop. And for me, like, I guess because I'm a drummer and I love, like, bass guitar, and man, we would get our gear loaded and I would go back in and, like, just try to soak up this culture of electronic music that I had never been around. You know, I knew, dude, I mean, like, Nine Inch Nails, like stuff that, you know, you would hear, like, electronic wise, like, yeah, I like that stuff. But then something bit me, like, in my back of my neck, and I would, the culture, the nightlife of, like, that style of house music and trap and electronic and, you know, the crazy acid stuff. And, like, I loved it. I didn't know how to create it. You know, I was just like, oh, okay, cool. Being a drummer, totally driven to it. So, like, over the years, I started collecting, like, analog synthesizers, like Juno 106s and weird drum machines, man, all kinds of weird stuff. So, totally an organic, like, heavy rock drummer, but, like, I love that stuff too, you know. And, dude, I don't limit anything. Like, I mean, I like polka, man. I love polka. Polka music is great. But I think in the everything kind of lined up, and I kind of took a leap of, you know, going out on the diving board and saying, guys, I can do this. I know what I'm doing. You know, I can do that. I can program the strings. I can program the pianos. I can program the, you know, Mellotron. I had no idea what I was doing. So the guys were like, yeah, great. And then, you know, I got in there and I was like, oh God, I'm like, what am I doing? I don't know what I'm doing. But it was like through work. I worked for weeks, man, like night and day, like drank enough energy drinks and coffee and snooze, man, to just like put somebody in the hospital. And Jordan really helped me too over the phone. He was like, do this, you know, like with like the technical side of like the programs, like how do you know? And man, it came out like I really learned a lot. I learned a lot. I programmed the strings on When Angels Learn to Fly and If My Heart Had Wings and some of the synth stuff and the little piano parts and stuff. And like, I've always been a piano player in the sense I don't consider myself a piano player, but I love to play. I'm not a professional at all, but as a writer to the band, contributing things, I'm a huge, massive Beatles fan. So like as a kid, we always had pianos in our house. Of course, my dad and uncle being the headhunters, guitars, drums, I'm just drawn to stuff like that. But this year has taught me, like, you can do anything you want to if you put your mind to it. And you just, man, hammer it. Like, hammer whatever you want to do. If it's building birdhouses, if it's doing woodworking, if it's, like, painting or, like, becoming a better parent or becoming a better musician or whatever, athlete. Like, just, you can do it. You just got to put your mind to it. And it's shown me, like, through such a negative, like, you know, I don't mean a negative year. I know. I mean, there's a lot of like real things that have happened this year that have been very traumatic. I mean, a lot of people have lost their lives. Had friends of mine that have lost, you know, family, and it's like, it sucks. You know, there's nothing great about that. It's awful. And I think that as the human race, I think we all just have to really try to look at the glass half full, you know, and try to be optimistic and just know that, you know, we're going to get through this. And whatever you know, if you, my biggest like advice to anybody, and I've had to tell myself this, is this won't be like this forever. It won't. It might be like this for a while, you know, and when I say, well, I don't know, hell, it may be another year. I don't know. But we as, you know, I think the best thing we can do as human beings is be, number one, kind to each other, be supportive, try to understand everybody's situation, even if you've never walked in their shoes, and just try to, like, man, just be a better human being, be a better leader, be a better dad, mom, like, you know, be inspiring to other people. And I think that, like, that's what's, I think, hard for music fans is the, and musicians too, is the outlet that we all have, the festivals, the sweaty 100-seat bar clubs, the arenas, the everything has been just taken away from us. That love of music. And but I'll tell you this, I've really realized that how therapeutic music is when you're not just hearing it, but you're actually listening to it. There's a difference. And I've been very guilty of like being, having like music. And I know what it is. Oh, it's a Thin Lizzy song. Oh, that's a Massive Attack song. That's a Zeppelin song. But like not sitting back and just like take, like living in that moment. I think this year is probably maybe going to help us if we can just like to live in the moment and enjoy our time with each other. And that's all the positive thoughts I've got.
Soweit zur Musik. Als waschechter Ami bist du aber auch sicherlich großer Sportsfan. Was ist dein American Football Team?
Well, when I was a kid, I was a huge Packers fan. But before that, I was a Cowboys fan. Now, I was like, I played, Chris and I both played like little league football. And I loved football, man. I was into it. And then I got in like middle school, like before you get into, you know, your high school years. And I got really into music. I was in school band, and Chris was in school band. Like Chris played, Chris actually, I don't know if anybody knows this, like, but Chris played saxophone. So I played drums, and we were in band together, you know, friends, and all of us love football. Ben's a basketball fan. Ben likes, he's really big, University of Kentucky, Wildcats basketball. They've had like in America, Kentucky's basketball team's always been just like killer, great basketball team. On days on the road, like, man, you know, there's been numerous times where we try to go find a baseball game to go to, you know. But I'll tell you, never yet, and I want to so bad, I want to go to a European football game. I know we call it soccer, but I've never been to one. And, man, we did that Alice Cooper tour. That was one of the greatest tours we've ever done. I mean, let me say this about Alice Cooper. To be in his 70s, to go up night after night and just, like, dude, put on a absolute rock and roll, can't get any more pro level, just legacy badass. I'm telling you, man, that show, like, and all the players in the band, like, dude, like, Nina, Tommy, Glenn, Roxy, all of them, dude, killer players. Chuck, bass player, and like every great people. We got to go to dinner one night with Alice, the whole crew. I mean, everybody from you know, the drivers, the crew, everybody. And you know, he took us out, and just one of the nicest human beings. I mean, I'm serious. When people say Alice Cooper is nice, that is an understatement. He is a genuine human being. Great guy. Very sincere. told us some killer stories of just him, you know, he's rock and roll. He's a legend, you know? So it was really amazingly, it was amazing for us to sit there and talk to him one-on-one and hang and, you know, the crowds too. I think for us, like we've been touring in Europe and, you know, throughout, you know, England and throughout Germany and Sweden, everywhere over there since 2007. And I think there was like, for us, you know, we've done the huge festivals, you know, the small club shows. We've been so fortunate to play in so many places and play with huge arena bands like Def Leppard, Whitesnake, another bunch of world-class human beings, great guys, Motorhead. Like we did the Nickelback tour in the UK. We did like all the Rock and Ring, Rock and Park festivals, Nova Rock, Download. I mean, Ramblin' Man. I think we thought that we had almost like reached a fan base that we had built. And that was like, you know, we would see it continue to grow some over the years. But, you know, when we did the Alice tour, it opened our eyes that there are tons of people like, and I don't mean this to sound egoed out or anything, but like there's tons of people that have no idea who we are. And that was an amazing feeling, because you get on the bus after playing the show, and like later that night after the show or the next day, people would be emailing us like on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and saying, "Dude, I'm a massive Alice Cooper fan. Never seen you guys. Didn't know who you were, and you guys opened up and you killed it. You know, it was awesome. Like what a great show. Like, you know, you guys were the perfect opener for Alice Cooper." So that was a great feeling, because that was throughout Spain, Italy, France, Germany, up in Sweden. You know, we went Austria, we went everywhere. And it was like, so it goes, I guess too, it goes to show you, like, when you have a band that luckily, thankfully, we have been able to tour in your all's part of the world, and I mean, people want to hear our music, and that is the greatest feeling in the world, because, you know, we still kind of float around like in this fairy tale of like, is this real? You know, because it is. We're still like huge fans of music, and we always try to be humble dudes and not like get the big head about anything. So I think that for us doing that tour showed us that when you think you've reached an audience, you may not have. So, and that's to any, I think that's like advice to any band or artist that's out there touring, or anybody doing anything creatively, you know, when you think you've kind of reached your audience and it might not, you might be tapped out. It's not, I mean, there's more people. So that was a great tour for us. And yeah, man, what a way to end a year last year.
Dann hoffe ich mal, dass ihr bald wieder hier auf Tour seid, damit wir gemeinsam zu einem Spiel gehen können. Eure Daten stehen ja aktuell für November an. Wäre mir eine Ehre.
That's on my bucket list, you know? And sorry, I skip around so much, man. I'm sorry. Talking about like European football, we were, I think it was in Frankfurt, where we might have had a day off before, and we parked our bus, and there was a match going on. And I don't know who it was between. Obviously, I think it was, you know, it was in Frankfurt, so I would say, you know, obviously, you're all's team, and somebody, but man, that's the loudest thing I ever heard in my life. Like the energy coming out of those stadiums, I mean, it's like it, you can't describe that to somebody. And I've never sat through a game. So that's on my bucket list, man. I want to go to a professional European football game.
Das könnte wirklich ein großer Spaß werden. Ich freue mich jetzt schon drauf.
You guys stay safe over there, and thanks so much for supporting us and our music, and man, just hey, love to everybody in your country. All right, next time I'm coming to a football game.
Für heute sind wir dann aber auch schon wieder durch. Ich gönne mir jetzt noch in Ruhe ein Gläschen Bourbon, während ich schon die Planung für die nächste Woche mache. Dann fahren wir über 100 Meilen nach Südwesten in die aktuell sicherlich wichtigste Musikstadt der USA, nach Nashville, Tennessee. Hier wird es unfassbar viel zu entdecken geben, und wir bekommen wieder tolle Gesprächspartner ans Mikrofon. Lasst euch überraschen und hört diese Geschichte im The Block of Rock Special American Road Trip. Bis dahin kann ich euch das letzte Blackstone Cherry Album The Human Condition wärmstens ans Herz legen. Ich habe für euch eine große Tasche mit den besten Songs von meinem American Road Trip mitgebracht und packe euch von BSC auch noch welche mit rein. Das Ganze gibt es auf Spotify. Ihr findet den Link dazu in den Shownotes, das ist die Beschreibung zu dieser Episode bei dem Portal, über die ihr diese Folge gehört habt. So, das war's dann jetzt. Prost! Auf euch, Leute! Danke, dass ihr mitgefahren seid.